Hello, everyone. I'm Nate Truax, and you're listening to the CrocCast Podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the CrocCast Podcast. I'm your host, Nate, and today I'm joined by Jack, more famously known as the Road Trip Monster. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Jack, you want to start us off with how you first got into reptiles?
Yes, I'd love that question. I always like hearing from other herpers how they got into it. So I did not grow up in herping. Like, I didn't have any parents or anybody that was into it. I like to, credit myself with really having a genuine interest in wildlife from, like, as far back as I can remember. One of my earliest childhood memories is flipping over rocks, picking up roly-polies. I'd cry when, like, a kid squashed a bug and, like, getting fights and stuff. I really loved all animals. And somewhere along the way, I started catching green and gnolls. I'd get all the neighborhood kids to come out and we'd catch green and gnolls. And, I think I realized what herping was, like, as a word. I didn't even know it existed until I was about 12 years old and YouTube was around and I started to see people posting about it. And that was when I really began immersing myself into, like, specifically the snakes. That was when I just got hooked. And from that point on, when I saw people catching cottonmouths and, like, knowing what the snake was and knowing everything, and it just really, really got me excited in a way that other things aside from soccer had not. I just trial and error, I'd just go out and find stuff. And it's hard to say, like, there's an exact moment or a specific thing that occurred that sent me in this path. I was just born and I started looking for snakes, and it's just kind of been the same ever since.
Yeah. So what would you say was your first memorable herping experience?
So, I'd say, like, the first time I ever legitimately said, like, okay, today I'm going out to specifically target snakes, and I'd, like, done my research on herping the whole winter. And that, like, first summer, it became hot enough. I gathered my cousin and my best friend, and I convinced them to go catch snakes with me. And, you know, I didn't know any better. I brought a net. And this is a story that, honestly, I'm questioning telling on the air because it's a bummer. It's an ecological bummer. And I have to apologize. I did not know what I was doing at this time. I was a young kid, and I literally looked down in this creek, right? And we were walking along the edge of the creek. That's what I would do to find snakes. And I see a snake in the mosses. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was a water snake. And so I get my big net and I put the net over the snake, and perfectly the snake just jumps into the net. But here's the thing, was two snakes jumped into the net. And so through deductive reasoning, I came to the conclusion that they were actually paired up, and they were so intertangled with one another that they had, I couldn't even tell that it was two snakes, probably due to my inexperience. At the time, it was a great, celebrated, awesome experience, and I was able to identify it as a water snake and safely handle it and took my first bite. And it was just, like, I posted on Facebook. I was so, so, so excited. And from that point on, I was like, okay, I can do this. I can go out and find snakes, like, on my own. And so it really was exciting. Now, of course, years later, I tell that story with a little bit of shame, but, you know, I didn't. Genuine accident. There was no, like, intentional anything about that. But it was a bit of a bummer, but a memory I'll never forget with some of my best friends. And, you know, we were just young and things are so much more exciting when you're a kid. So, you know, you're experiencing life for the first time and experiencing herping for the first time. So that comes to mind as one of the early exciting memories.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember being a little kid, and also getting a butterfly net or something like that. Yeah. Try and herp. You know, old and wiser now. Realize that's not really a tool to use.
No, we all got to start somewhere. My next thing was I took a plastic clothes hanger and I just snapped it and then duct taped it to a stick, and that lasted me a good couple of years there.
I never even thought of that. So
it couldn't hold a lot of weight, but it did okay for me for a while.
Yeah. So you used to live out in the Las Vegas area, correct?
That is correct. That was where I began my Instagram page, was when I moved out there. So yeah, I spent 2 years in Las Vegas, then moved back over to Houston, where I'm originally from.
Okay. So what's the herbie out around Las Vegas?
Man, all my buddies are going to hate me for saying it, but I love it. I love the desert, and I find it just to be better than some of the herping I'm doing down here, despite the biodiversity that we have out in this area. The Mojave Desert, and honestly, the Sonoran and the Chihuahuan, I think there's a Great Basin as well. All those deserts to me are just so incredible, not only from like the animals that have evolved to survive in such a harsh environment and their crazy adaptations and aesthetic features, but also the actual habitat that you're hiking. And then, you know, the views, the landscapes that you're looking at while you herp is a little more scenic, in my opinion. And I say a little, but it's significantly more scenic. And also, I just am more of a rattlesnake focused guy. That's what gets me more excited, I'd say, from like a, you know, motivation standpoint. And the herping is definitely more like rattlesnake focused out there, out west in general, just because there's more of them, and they're hard out here in Houston, man. They're difficult. I actually live in a patch where 30 minutes north, we've got rattlesnakes, 30 minutes south, we've got rattlesnakes, but where I'm at, there are none. And so anyways, I'm kind of rambling here, but going back to why I loved Las Vegas so much, you could drive like 3 hours in any direction and be in some of the best national park services in the country. You could go up to the Grand Canyon. You can go out to California. You can go south into Arizona. There's just so much to do from that like central location in Vegas. Within a couple hours, you're like in some of the coolest areas, not to mention that Vegas itself, not a lot of people like look at it as a herping destination, but it has some awesome herping. You've got Gila monsters, you know, and on the east side, you can get speckled rattlesnakes. On the west side, you can get Panamint rattlesnakes. You know, it's just a cool area and an area that is not herped a ton. So it's like, you kind of got the place to yourself. It feels like a lot out there. And I really enjoyed that freedom, that wildness to it, where you could drive 30 minutes and you're so far from anybody. Whereas like here in Houston, I'll drive 30 minutes and like, yeah, I'm still in Houston, you know.
Yeah, I spent some time around Houston, so I know exactly what you're talking about. So,
yeah.
So, what was your favorite place to go herping in the greater Vegas area?
Man. That's a good question. I think,
and if you feel like you need to keep it confidential, I understand. So.
Of course, yeah, I would never really give out like a specific. I'll go as far as like kind of the area. So it's tough, man, because like there's some really cool herping on your way to Arizona. That's sweet. You got some cool spots along Lake Mead for like speckled rattlesnakes, and I love that area. But I think I almost lean towards heading north in Moapa Valley, where I believe, please don't misconstrue. I'm making the effort here. I think it's the Moapa Native American tribe, and I could be wrong there, so I hope I'm not. But anyways, so there's a big plot of land, and that's where also Valley of Fire State Park is. And that whole area seems to have like some red, sandy, like what's the mineral, it's like iron or something like that, that makes all the rock formations like bright orange. It looks like you're on Mars. And so some of the speckled rattlesnakes out there are like this bright pink orange color. The sidewinders are almost pink, like the St. George ones. And they get kind of like, there's just less people out there. It's a further drive. So they get a little bigger, I found. Usually I don't find sidewinders too big, but I saw some massive ones out there. And then, of course, they've got the bighorn sheep that are just like running rampant all through that state park that you can stop and photograph. And I really kind of, I fell in love with that area because it's just far enough to get away from the crowds. And yeah, the orange like landscape really, really was cool for, from like, I really like to find unique snakes. And so when there's a unique landscape or habitat that can naturally select for a unique snake, that gets me extra excited.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually, back in 2020, I went out to St. George for a week to visit a friend of mine. We did a bunch of herping out there. So
nice. Yeah. I still have not done like an official St. George pink, sidewinder trip. And I don't know how I never got around to it, but I'll get it done one of these days.
Yeah, we didn't find any sidewinders, unfortunately. Okay. Only rattlers we could find are Great Basins, so.
Okay, nice. Those are good. Those are good, too, man. I only ever did see, like, two or three of them living out there because they're just out of range for me, so I'd have to drive, like, at least an hour and a half north, probably more. But still close enough where I was able to get a couple, and I didn't really expect to be so impressed, but man, those are really, really pretty rattlesnakes. I really like the like silver, like kind of white black look, that some of them have. It's like, yeah, they've got like a white silver, kind of like color, but with these like dark black buckles on them that look like very contrasty. Whereas some of the other ones would be more of like an orange brownish kind of like color. So I really like those black and white ones.
Yeah. Let's see. In terms of other than rattlesnakes, what are some of your other favorite herps to find out there?
In the Vegas area?
Yeah.
So, other than rattlesnakes, man. You know,
I know. I basically took off 90% of the menu there. I know.
But. No, yeah. No, there's a lot of cool snakes. Trust me. I'm not like fully just only croats, nor am I only snakes. But I think, bro, it's got to be the Gila monster, although I never found one. But some of those Gila monsters I've seen, like INAT sightings and stuff, they seem to be really bright orange and like super pretty out there. Again, probably due to just the nature of the landscape. And what they would want to blend in with or whatever. But yeah, it's gotta be Gila monster. Our only venomous lizard in North America, or I guess it's like a bacteria or whatever, but
it's a venom.
What is that?
It's a venom.
It is a venom. Okay. I guess I was like misinformed. I thought at one point I read that it's like a saliva mixture of sorts that like,
are you thinking of Komodo dragons maybe?
Maybe that's what I'm getting it mixed up with. If that's a thing for them, then that's probably it.
Well, go on a side tangent there. That's originally what was thought with Komodos, but now I found that those are also venomous as well. So,
is it true that they were both thought to be that way?
I think the Gilos were known for a long time to be venomous.
It makes sense because you do see those now. You know, now that you say it, like, and I'm picturing them in my head, you see those venom glands. They're kind of like protruding out a little bit in their head.
Well, it's more like their lower jaws where their venom gland is. So
yeah. Like the side profile. If you like look at them top down, the way like a rattlesnake kind of has those glands on the side.
From what I know, it's actually not on the side of the back of the head. It's more like I said, along the lower jaw, running the lower jaw. That's where the venom glands are.
Oh shit! I don't know nothing, but yeah, that's interesting.
I just got lucky and got to work with the bunch of Gilas and being a lizard in college.
There's so much knowledge out there that I don't know. I don't even try to act like I'm an expert. But yeah, that's news to me. I figured they had regular venom delivery, but it's like underneath their jaw?
It runs along the length of their lower jaw. And basically, to get it to go mix in with their saliva, they have to chew.
I see.
So.
Okay. So there is a venom, and then they just sort of chew, mixes in with their saliva, and kind of mixes into the
wound. Yeah.
I always wonder, like, why they evolved to be venomous, considering they're like egg eaters, mainly. Or do they? Do you know? What else do they feed on?
I think it's pretty much whatever they could get their mouth on, like rodents and birds and stuff like that. But I actually had this one guy. So this is way, way back on a podcast, like episode 10 or something like that. Personal friend of mine who he actually developed diabetes medication from Gila monster venom. And he said the reason he was able to develop that is he found an enzyme in Gila monster venom that very, was it insulin that it mimics or something insulin, like that?
Yeah.
So what he kind of speculates that part of that function is because Gila monsters go so long through such long periods of the year without eating, they need that kind of like insulin buffer in their saliva and their venom in order to not kill themselves with a blood sugar crash when they eat. So.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's just speculation, but.
Yeah, no, it's impressive that he's able to kind of like work backwards from that. And I see it. Like, I think it could really be true. But yeah, so Gila monster is really cool. And there's a lot of neat snakes. I always enjoyed the lyre snakes. There's just a lot of cool little fun facts about those snakes. And they're just neat. What else? Bro, I'm struggling because like the top five snakes that come to mind are all
rattlesnakes. Throat.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. But you know, I liked the leaf nosed as like a cute snake, like just like a fun cute snake that you photograph a couple times, but then after that you're kind of like, okay, I've seen a few leaf nosed and they're real small and stuff, so I usually would pass them up from a photography perspective. But when I found my first leaf nose, I actually had not only never seen one, but I didn't know they existed. I just like for some reason had kind of missed, like skipped over them when I was doing my research on like the Vegas area and all the different snakes. And yeah, I came out there and just found the snake and I was like, what is wrong with this scale? And then I realized that, you know, they've got that little burrowing scale that they use, and I learned about them and kind of fell in love with them for a brief period, went out and found a few more. And, but yeah, I kind of move on a lot of times with species. When I find something and I've seen it a couple of times and I've taken photos of it before, it's like, okay, cool. Check that one off the list and sort of move on a little bit. Now I see them again, I'm not mad about it, but, yeah, I usually try to like get lifers and then move on. Unless you get into like locality specific stuff and you can start looking for like more unique individuals within a population, that can be kind of cool as well.
Yeah, but I don't fault you for your top five snakes being rattlesnakes. I mean, I was in a group chat with a bunch of Aussies probably 2 years back, and with back then
who?
Aussies, Australians.
Oh, okay.
I was the only American in there, so I had to represent.
But
they're kind of, you know, lampshading North American herps a little bit. So I asked them, what's your favorite snake? And almost all of them said Death Adder. I was like, oh, your favorite Australian snake is just a cheap knockoff of a rattlesnake. So,
bro, we've got some cool snakes. I don't know. I'm not very well versed in all the millions of different friggin' snakes that we've got across the world. But what I see here in my little world in the U.S., we've got some really cool rattlesnakes, especially the rattlesnake diversity is pretty neat. Yeah, it's just a cool little area. Now, I don't know. I'm excited about maybe one of these days getting out of this country and herping, you know, somewhere else, Australia being a place that would be big on my list. But yeah, for now I'm enjoying North America and there's plenty to do here.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. What was I going to ask? Oh, but speaking of herping in North America, you recently did a trip. Well, just yesterday. You got back from a trip out to the Davis Mountains. You want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, man. I'll give you a little like play-by-play, I guess. Now, you'll probably get into this later, but to give you some background, I am healing from a rattlesnake bite, and I'm about 18 days in, and that's a loaded topic, but we're going to hold off for a second.
Just a little hook to keep the audience interested.
Exactly. There you go. There you go. They'll stay on for this herp breakdown story. So, you know, I drove out there kind of on a whim. I was like, you know what? I probably should not go herping. I should probably rest and elevate my finger and relax. But a guy I'd been kind of chatting with over the years, and you know, this happens. You talk to people on Instagram and months go by and you kind of forget and you're like, what's that person's name? And you know, and so I knew of him and I'd seen his name before. His name was Brent. And he was like, hey man. And he'd asked me the same thing the year before, like, hey, if you're in West Texas, you should go to Snake Days. And I was like, yeah, man, I've heard about it, but I'm always like herping, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I can't fathom like stopping and driving like north. And so it never worked out with the timing wise. But it was just coincidence that the prior year I was literally in West Texas while Snake Days was going on. And I was like, sorry, man, I got to make it over here and I couldn't make it. And so he was like, hey man, Snake Days is happening again. And I was already kind of thinking about going, and he said that, and I was just going to be sitting around like, you know, eating Tylenols, like, why not do that in my car? You know, walking a cut, like, can't be that hard, you know, on my body. So I'm convincing myself, and I take off on Friday, and I have to bring my dog because I didn't arrange for anybody to take care of him. So that was a little tricky, but worked around it. We shot down to like, you know, I won't get into super specific, but like, if you know gray banded king snakes, at the beginning of their range is like kind of Comstock, Del Rio area. So like, that's usually where I start. And I managed to get there by like 10 or 11 PM coming from Houston. It's about 6 hours or so. So I hit the cuts, and funny enough, this is kind of cool. I'm walking the cuts and I get buzzed by an Aatrox from not my cut, but the cut opposite of the road, like behind me. Okay. So I'm shining one cut and there's a cut like 40 yards or 20 yards behind me, opposite side of the highway. And I hear a rattlesnake buzzing from over there. I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, I look both ways. Don't quote me on this. And I run across the road and I'm like, where is it? I'm looking for it. And the thing was, it stopped buzzing. So I'm like, why would you buzz me from afar and then stop buzzing when I show up? I'm trying to understand what a rattlesnake thinks. But anyways, I show up and he stopped rattling. So it took me a minute. I find it, took a couple photos, and just kind of moved on. But that was my only snake of the night. And I wasn't too surprised by that. West Texas has always been brutal to me. It probably took me 6 or 7 trips to find like a snake out there. So, and that's just purely based off luck. I really thought like I was doing everything right. But anyway, so I got the Aatrox. That was the first find. I camped. And then I, you know, wake up in my truck bed and I get cruising and I try to like get on the road as soon as possible. So we're talking like 3 hours of sleep a night kind of thing in West Texas, if you're lucky. And I get up, the sun's rising, I hit the dirt roads, I'm looking for ideally a Mexican hognose. And again, man, I do not have good luck out there. And I just like, I can't figure it out. Mexican hognoses are not that hard to find out there. I know where to get them. And I know people who go out there and find them like a dime a dozen. And I can't seem to find one. Anyways, that's my little complaint there. But didn't find any. What I did see was an ornate box turtle, I think is what they got out there. And then a couple fearnose, Texas horn lizards. And I actually saw some elk, which was cool. I don't mind a good mammal. So I saw a herd of elk. There's actually a young up and coming bull. I guess that wouldn't be called a bull. I don't know what you call that, but his antlers were growing.
I think it is. And, bull.
Yeah, I would say so too. But like, yeah, I guess not like a full, unless there's a word for like the intergrade zone where their antlers are developing for the year, because it's like an annual process. I don't know if there is a name for that, like a spike, I guess maybe you could say.
Button top? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but it had some antlers. It's cool, and there's a little fawn, a little baby, with mama, and got some cool photos of them on my zoom lens. And so I was happy with the morning. It didn't really pan out how I wanted, but I took my licks and I headed over to Snake Days because I wanted to give it a shot this year. You know, I do value getting involved in the community, especially scientific communities. And I felt like I could have made a better effort when, you know, on my West Texas trip. So it's like, okay, it's going on. I'm going to stop by for a visit. And I had no clue what to expect. I'll be honest. Like, I didn't do a lot of research going into it on their website. I knew that they would give some seminars and that there'd be some herpers. To be honest, I was a little bit nervous. Like, it would be people are going to get pissed when I say this, but I thought it was going to be like a heavy collecting kind of community a little bit. That was a little bit of a fear of mine, was that I was going to get connected with like a bunch of people who collect heavily. And that was not the case at all. That was like a worry that popped up in my brain because, it's West Texas and I'm sorry, but people do collect out there pretty regularly. Yeah. And I don't think that's a big deal or anything. I'm not making a big statement here. I'm just saying that, you know, I was worried it was going to be like less conservation focused, and it was actually very, very conservation focused. I don't know if it's always been that way or not, but the day I showed up, they had three really awesome talks. Two of them were on Texas horned lizards. Like, the first person came out and talked about the reintroduction project. The next person, who was a TCU grad, Go Frogs, he talked about actually like the habitat side of it and recreating suitable habitat for them so that they can actually, you know, come back on a broader scale. And then the third talk was very interesting, and I forget her name or organization that she's with. So pardon me, but I'll try to get that info to you. She came and did a talk on tegus, and her, like, if I could summarize it, it was really eye-opening because she's basically like, look, tegus are a huge problem in Florida. The government has essentially said, we can't solve this problem. We're giving up and we're just going to make it illegal. We're just going to outlaw it. So all the breeders, they basically went, okay, we're moving to Texas. And they all moved, not all, but like majority of them moved to Texas. She threw out some rough numbers, like just anecdotal stuff. Like, I know like eight big breeders that have just moved there kind of thing. So I'll take her word for it. But so basically her message was like, look, prepare for this proactively because it's on its way to Texas and you've seen what happened to Florida. So that was kind of that. And I thought that was really interesting too. And the coolest part, obviously, man, is the people that you meet. I met some really, really cool people, that I've like always known about, who I've looked up to as like legends in the Texas herping scene, people who you just hear about, and they're kind of like this upper echelon of like the herping world, and they're finding the coolest stuff. And you're like, how do these guys do it? You know, those types of people are there, and they're just regular old folks. And you get to sit down and like shake their hand and get to know them. And it was just like, it was a great experience. I don't know how to kind of put it into words, but I definitely feel like I'll be going back and trying to build more connections and get more involved, not just with Snake Days, but in general, with the scientific community, and not so much even science specifically, but like conservation and land management, if you will, things like that. So I definitely want to, you know, as I grow and learn more and keep doing this, I want to keep gearing that way. So you asked me about the trip, and I'm taking forever because I ramble. So that was Snake Days. After that, we all go out herping, and we had, in my opinion, a good night. Now, other West Texas herpers might say otherwise, but saw a Chihuahua night snake, which wasn't all that exciting, but we got a nice little baby Lepidus, which is really cool. It's probably a yearling, And it was just starting to show some color in it, like some little bit of orange red. Snapped a few photos of it. It was real easy to work with. So I was able to just take a few shots and and I was happy, man. I really wanted to see a Lepidus. I love mottled rock rattlesnakes. They're arguably one of my favorite Texas rattlesnake species. And I was just happy to get one. I was happy to meet some people. And it was just fun, kind of like making some new connections, getting a couple snakes. And I don't know, man. I guess normal people might not find that all that crazy. Like, you saw a few snakes. You drove like 30 hours for, you know, it doesn't really add up probably in the average human brain. But in my brain, it's beautiful. You're just so immersed in like the beauty around you. The Davis Mountains are gorgeous. And they're so like unknown. You don't see a lot of people out there. And West Texas to me just has this feel to it, this remoteness to it that reminds me a lot of some of the areas out in Las Vegas and stuff. And so that's special to me. Anywhere I can go and kind of feel a little bit just away from it all is valuable to me. So that was a great trip. Great people, couple good herps. And it was a rocket run. So there's not too much to talk on because like, literally, I drove up Friday night, got a couple hours of herping in. You know, the next morning I road cruise, then I went herping that night, and then I went home. Now, normally I would like go herping in the morning and then go home, but I went out to breakfast with some friends instead, and then I went home. So, like, that's really all that happened. There's some cool things that happened to other people. My buddies saw a mountain lion, and I'm like angrily jealous. Like, I'm actually just like pissed off. I just want to see one so bad. That's to me like the pinnacle of North American wildlife is the mountain lion. And so that was cool just to hear about it. But that's kind of the gist of it.
So what has been your favorite place, general area to go herping in Texas?
Good question. And I think, so it would be a really easy answer if I could like hike all around the Davis Mountains, but with the private land, it makes it tough. I really love the scenery and I love the species up there. This is another hot take. North Texas was really, really, really cool. And I've only been up to there once. And I saw my first Massasauga, and the prairie out there is gorgeous. I'm really starting to get more into the flora side of things and learning about prairies and learning about plants and stuff. So it's kind of cool. It's just cool timing for me to like start to learn some of that stuff, go out there and see it. Although it is kind of depressing when you look at like how much of it we've lost, but, cool area up there in North Texas. So I feel like it's kind of between those two. But in all reality, you know, I've herped the Houston area my whole life, and this Spring Creek kind of area, I've spent 22 out of the last 27 years of my life, here. And so I know it well. And in this area, I'd say, you know, you got to go after the timber rattlesnakes and the National Forest, Sam Houston area. You get the piney woods. It's very quiet. And, you know, being able to find timbers and pygmies for me, like just being able to know that like that's a possibility is pretty cool. So I like to go up there a couple times a year. Bro, I've literally just listed off like every region of Texas, and I was about to say South Texas too. I love herping. Like, I literally think everything's cool. It's really hard for me to pick like, oh, it's by far my favorite. Like, there's no clear victor with this. I guess I'd say Davis is just to give you an answer.
Yeah. Yeah, but you said you're getting some plants now. I'm just like, another herper bites the dust, gets to the plants.
You should just end the call, bro. No,
Andrew Austin is all downhill from here.
Say, him and Danny, Arriaga, who I've been herping with, good buddy. Like, bro, these are guys now who, at least I'll speak for Danny because I've been herping with him recently. But this dude slamming on the brakes, like slamming on the brakes, and I'm thinking there's a snake. And he's running out of the car to look at a milkweed. And I'm like, bro, what? Like, come on, man. It's a milkweed. It's not like a milk snake. You don't have to freaking slam on the brakes and get me all excited. I'm out running out of the car thinking there's a snake. And, you know, he's photographing plants. I'm like, what is going on here, bro? So that's now, in all reality, I do really take a lot of interest in all things wild, but I am not, I won't back down with my herper buddies. I'll definitely get into the debates on, like, bro, you're a birder, dude. You're just a plant guy, freaking botanist. But yeah, definitely a snake forward person, no doubt.
Yeah. I mostly, for the most part, don't care. I just do it for the meme, but more or less. So yeah. I just fight for the sake of the meme.
It is. But here's where the argument comes in. It's like, and it's true, the more you understand the plant and the soils and the rocks and the geology and the, you know, the whole picture of the ecosystem, the better you're going to have odds of finding snakes. And so I found myself as I meet more herpers who are, you know, often much more knowledgeable than myself. And they start dropping these little hints of, like, these little facts. They're like, oh yeah, because the soil is this way and, like, the runoff from the stream. And they just start talking all these, like, crazy, really fascinating facts that essentially lead them to, and this is why I think we're going to find an animal here. And you're like, wow, that's incredible. And that's what a lifetime of studying animals will give you. But as somebody who unfortunately does not have, like, a full-time career in wildlife, you know, I'm always amazed by, like, just how much everybody knows about the, you know, the big picture of the ecosystem and then can put that into snake terms. So it's cool getting out with those, like, real deal, super good herper people.
Yeah. But you mentioned finding pygmy rattlesnakes. I was about to say, you probably made Andrew super jealous with that. So.
Nope, because I never found one.
Oh,
bro, they're ghosts out there, man. Like, I do know one guy, and I actually feel bad because I know of him. We talk a lot. Oh, why am I drawing a blank? His name is Erectile Dysfunction on Instagram. Yeah, bro, cool guy and finds a ton of herps. But apparently, this dude, he's from Austin, drove out to. He drove out to the Sam Houston National Forest. I heard this from a buddy of mine. And he's from Austin, right? And I've been herping the Sam Houston National Forest my whole life, literally, and have found one timber rattlesnake there. Okay. One singular timber rattlesnake for 20 years of effort. This dude comes out and on his first night finds, like, a couple timbers, I think, and a pygmy. Or one or the other. Like, he found both and he found one of them in multiple numbers. And it just, like, it's just, I don't allow myself to get too worked up about stuff like that because it's just how it is, bro. We can sit here and act like we're all good herpers and stuff. Half of this crap is just comes down to luck and timing, you know, trying to put yourself in the right spot at the right time and hoping for the odds to play out in your favor.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, pygmies are really rare. And I wish I could say I found one. And I've tried hard, you know, I've even herped the burns. You know, I've came up there thinking, okay, I'm gonna walk this fire line, like all kinds of stuff. I've tried it all. Haven't found one yet, but hey, that's what makes it fun. And sometimes I find myself disappointed. It sounds crazy. Like when you find a lifer, it's almost like, dang, like, what do I do now? You know, it's like the big, like, driving motivation, the like anger of not having that snake yet, it recedes and you're like, okay, I just go get to find my second one now. And the, you know, of course you still do it, but there's something special about that first one. So yeah, Andrew would I'd be pissed too if I found that out.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, you found more Tim Morales likes than I ever have, so.
That because you've not found any? Because I've only found a few, bro. I'm not like a king of herping. I've only found like three or four now. Three.
Yeah. Well, I'll probably change that this fall. I'm planning on not over to the Shawnee National Forest over in Southern Illinois, over that snake road there. See if I can find some there.
Nice. Yeah. I've been learning. I think I first heard about that place when I was younger, maybe like around the same time I got into herping. And it's always been like this, like, oh, like Snake Road must be like the greatest ever. Now, as I, you know, mature and learn more about herping, obviously there's all kinds of places to go find snakes. But yeah, that's a cool scene there with the swamp on one side and the rocky bluffs on the other. And if I ever got up to the Northeast, which is one area of the U.S. that I have really neglected, like literally have not been there, I'd really love to do some den site herping. Like,
yeah,
you see
that'd
those
be
videos
cool.
Of dudes just like pulling up, dudes and girls pulling up on like, you know, just like six timbers and a couple copperheads sitting out on the bask, absorbing the sunlight with something
like the melanistic forms of timbers as well.
Yeah, that especially is another big draw for me. Like the all black ones, dude, so cool.
Yeah.
And you know, is that more of like a, maybe it serves both, but like, is that like a sun absorption kind of scenario, or is it more of like a habitat selection thing? Like, is it higher elevation? It's a little colder than it is over here. Like, what is driving that?
I'd imagine it's probably predominantly solar, because a lot of the force up, well, you said Northeast. I'm going to have to ask you to define where your cutoff or Northeast and Midwest is. So,
Yeah, that's a good point, man. I'm not, like I said, I'm not really good. I guess Illinois is Midwest for sure. Well, not I guess. It clearly is. But yeah, when you said timbers and started talking about something north and east of me, I just jumped to like timber rattlesnake dens. But yeah, those would definitely be much further east when you get into that like the kind of like the New York air, like that sort of herping, when you get into those, like basically the timbers, and I'm kind of assuming here.
It's like the Northern Appalachians.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they're kind of, it's a little cooler and they're kind of limited to those den sites where they got to stick kind of close by. And so it's just neat to be able to kind of target them that way, as opposed to just like aimlessly wandering through the forest and like hoping you run into one. And plus the scenery aspect is cool, but yeah, I've always thought it'd be fun to go up there. And for some reason in my brain, Illinois is like kind of the Northeast, but it's definitely not.
Yeah. I was going to say, as an Ohioan, I would take offense if you lump me in with the Northeast.
No, I wouldn't take that stance, but I had to ask you a little bit about the Ohio herping, if I may. You found a sog out there?
I have not, unfortunately. They're rarer than hen's teeth up here, unfortunately.
Yeah, I a buddy of mine, Rex, Mr. Scaloperus on Instagram, I could go off on how intelligent and really, really cool that guy is. But he was involved in like some sort of study and survey through his college, through his degree, where he was actually able to go out and help with surveys and stuff. And so he got to see a few, and some of the facts that he was spitting out regarding like the habitat loss and the concern regarding that species is really, it's scary. It's a big bummer for sure.
Yeah.
And also on top of it, like in my career outside of herping in a very different like business setting, Ohio is actually one of the hotspots for some commercial development this year.
Yeah.
And that's one of like the sales leads that they're talking about. And I'm like, no.
Hey, at least you know me now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
But thing is, I know of like the guy who's in charge of the state's Massasauga research projects. I I don't know him personally. I know of him, and I know people who do know him, and I've tried to reach out to him. The thing is, he's in charge of that project. He's in charge of a bunch of other stuff. He's like the head herpetologist at Ohio State, so he's just busy. So he probably has never even seen my email.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. I've been told by people who do know him that if I did manage to get his ear, I could probably get some volunteer help on those Massasauga research projects.
Is it pretty much like you have to know somebody out there? Because I imagine it's like private property or nothing, right?
There's a decent number of state parks, but
okay, so you can still like feasibly, if you put in like enough work, technically you could get them without having to like go out with a biologist. That's good.
But it probably would also help to know people, especially I think it's, we also have a lot of salamanders out here, which oftentimes are very, you know, densely located in certain spots. Mm-hmm. So it helps know people who have a spot, so to speak. But speaking of getting bummed out on finding a certain species, I've been trying to find eastern fox snakes, and they're up on like the northwest coast of Lake Erie. So if you know what Cedar Point is, they're around Cedar Point, so to speak.
Okay.
But there's this one state park near Cedar Point. I won't name it on air, but everyone I know around here says, "Oh, that's the spot to go to find eastern fox snakes." And it's so easy. You just go along the causeway through the marsh, and they'll be sunning themselves on the rocks along the side of the causeway. And every time I go there, nothing. Just Midland painted turtles. It's just.
And unfortunately, as much as we love turtles, for us snake guys, it's just not. It's no eastern Massasauga.
Yeah.
And
I've also bummed out that I never found a Butler's garter snake there either, so.
I have this kind of like joke with my friends where I claim that I hate garter snakes. I don't actually hate garter snakes. I do think they're kind of boring. Don't get me wrong. I recognize the diversity. There's some cool ones out there. Generally speaking, though, I don't get too excited about garters. Or what are they like? So to the extent that I don't even know what the species you just mentioned looks like, what are they, unique out there, or are they...
I had to look up their exact range. They're more like the glaciated western part of the state. So the glaciated flatter parts. They look a lot like your typical eastern garter. So kind of black with the three stripes. Yeah. But what's thing about them is they're actually especially adapted to eating earthworms and leeches. So they actually have a shortened and widened skull compared to other garters.
Now that's something I can get behind. You're starting to speak my language here. There's something unique there. Just the fact that they kind of are that specific with their diet alone is interesting. But then of course the skull size, that's neat, man. That's pretty cool. That's something I would get excited about if I found.
Yeah. So, but I actually recently did a trip out to Northern California to visit family, but I also managed to do a little bit of herping on the side. So
how'd that go?
Found a northern Pacific, so rattler. So
nice. I actually not got one yet.
So I could check off yet another Crillus oriana subspecies off the list.
Yeah, I don't even know what the hell they're doing with those things these days. I try to keep up with the taxonomy, but I've got my southern Pacific, but really like. You know, I flipped a board and saw like a neonate SOPAC, and that's the extent of my Southern Pacific experience. So I really do need to get out and give California another go for those snakes. They shouldn't be too hard to find. They're like pretty common, but just haven't seen one yet.
Yeah. And see where else to find rough skin newt, which is kind of cool. Nice. I put it all in a YouTube video, so it's a lot. So
I'm missing something there. You got a YouTube? So. I'm a follower. I didn't even know that.
It's not that big. It's mostly just the podcast plus a few random videos I put up there. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, same. That's my YouTube right now. It's like, if I had unlimited time, I'd be doing a lot of stuff, but yeah. I don't. And so right now, it's kind of like a graveyard of like old videos from when I was younger, and then like a few new ones. I've tried to start getting into, but There's definitely going to be a push near the end of this year to like get a bunch of YouTube videos up, like shorter, kind of like quick informational on like, hey, this is the road trip I'm going on. Here's some like vague tips of like kind of how I'm conducting this trip. And then just kind of speak on like why it's cool to appreciate the wildlife and what animals I saw. And so something like that along those lines, I do want to get into that. But man, it's hard. I'm trying to do like all of the social medias. I'm trying to stay on Facebook and on Instagram and everything. But yeah, no, what's it called? What's your YouTube?
Crocast Podcast. Same as the.
Duh. Yeah. Okay.
But yes, you also found a couple of coastal garter snakes, which is a subspecies of Western terrestrial. Which, man, I'm just gonna say they're kind of dull looking, in my opinion.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a olive brown with gold stripes, yellow stripes. But the belly is kind of interesting. It's kind of a very dull baby blue, kind of, almost with a few random orange specks on it.
Nice. Okay.
And I did manage to find, like, I found quite a few Western fence lizards, but, you know, big whoop. If you're out there, you're supposed to find those.
True. Yeah, I,
But I did also manage to find, what's it called? Valley garter snake. So, Thamnophis, Sertalis, Fitcheye. So, those are, like, the red-colored ones, so.
Oh, yeah. Okay, if it's what I'm picturing, Those are pretty sweet. Northern California has some really cool rattlesnakes. There's like a handful of species that I would actually go target and would be really excited. Those being one of them.
Yeah. So. But we'll see here. Probably close to an hour in now. I think it's time we finally talk about it. Let's talk about the snake bite.
Yeah. I figured that's why you called me on.
Actually, no. I just realize, oh, there's someone who's kind of cool. I haven't had on yet. So I don't.
Yeah. So it makes me feel a little better, but yeah.
No, I'm just milking you for the bruise content. So
yeah.
I'm just using it so I could use that big blood blister in the thumbnail. So
yeah, exactly. We should record it and it'll go viral and we'll all get famous and then we can retire and go herping forever.
Yeah, exactly.
No, so this bite, all jokes aside, I don't want to, you know, make it too light and joking and funny because snake bites are serious and they can obviously not only kill you, but in most cases, you know, injure you. And really the real tragedy is that I have now become a new number to the statistic of snake bites per year that a bunch of idiots are going to quote when they're like, oh, rattlesnakes are mean. Look how many people were bitten in 2022. Well, really, people aren't being bit in the wild as it happens, but it's like, it's very rare. Whereas people like me who, for lack of a better term, were just dumb enough to get bit. These are the people that is driving that statistic. And so I'm just upset with myself that I allowed a lapse of just simple, basic decision-making skills to result in now me potentially, you know, losing mobility in my finger fully and, you know, potentially harming the reputation of the animals that I love and the community of keepers who I'm not even fully like I wouldn't even consider myself a big time hawk keeper. Like it's something that I'm getting into and yeah, man, it's not a cool thing. It's not anything to brag about, but I figured after 11 days of kind of just sitting on it, recovering and not telling anybody about it, I was like, you know, I might as well just face this head on, attempt to sort of educate people about what I've learned. And, you know, just be open about it and take my licks and, you know, like acknowledge what I did wrong and, just kind of go from there and make sure this doesn't happen again. So that's kind of my preamble, but you're probably wondering like how it occurred. And what happened was a mixture of multiple errors on my part that all contributed to lead to a bite. And so mistake number one, I've got a pair of long tongs that are in my standard feeding protocol that I should be using every single time. They were upstairs, okay? And I had a pair of short tongs downstairs. I was also in a hurry. And so that's, I know, I see you shaking your head. There's no such thing as a hurry when you're feeding snakes. I know that. But again, I wouldn't have been bit if I were doing things correctly on this one. So that was a mistake. And I think that that's the, I'm not saying that that led to me making the mistake of being bit, but what it did was it prevented me from running upstairs to grab that long one. And that is the biggest crucial aspect of that, was I didn't go get my long tongs. And so what happened was, you know, I've worked with rattlesnakes for a long time, and I know their strike distance pretty well. And the thing was, is I wasn't looking at the snake when this occurred. So issue number three, and this is one that I'm ashamed to admit, but the day prior, overnight, right? So I wake up, and that morning I saw my light just went out in my snake cage. Happens from time to time. And so when I got home late from work that day. I had not been able to go to a reptile store or order anything online quick enough to get there. So I still did not have a light. I kind of basically took a quick glance at where the snake was. And by quick glance, it wasn't a quick glance. You know, I looked at it. I thought I understood kind of how its body was positioned. And when I saw it, what I understood was that its head was pointed to the bottom left corner of the cage. Okay. And so when I went in with those short tongs, I was reaching towards the bottom left corner of the cage to dangle that pinky rat near its head so that it would strike. And bro, that lighting, or maybe the snake moved, I don't know. But all I know was it took a couple seconds longer than he normally takes to tag his food. And I had this quick thought of like, something's off. I need to pull my hand out of the cage. As I had this thought of like, why is he taking so long? And I start pulling my hand back. As soon as I move, like that movement, boom, I'm hit. And I didn't even have like, it's so weird when you get bit like that, because you're so far from thinking you're about to be bit. And then it happens. And like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, I've spent my whole life working with snakes, and like arrogantly, I think I've always kind of assumed wouldn't happen to me, even if I cut corners. And this is what happened here, was I cut corners. And man, like, I hope I can be an example to other people. I can assure you, it's not worth the losing your finger potentially. I'm sure I'm taking a hit to the reputation a little bit. And it's not cool to be bit by a rattlesnake at all. So take it as a learning lesson. But those are, in my eyes, kind of the main causes leading to that bite. And so, you know, I have to be better than that. There's really no excuse. I'm not trying to bring those up as if like, oh, that's why it happened. Like, as if it's not my fault. Like, all those things are my fault. And yeah, man, I just screwed up. I don't know how else to put it. I screwed up and did something that the me of 3 weeks ago would have been like, well, that's just irresponsible keeping. Like, that's just irresponsible. Why would you do that? And then I did it, and then I got tagged, and I paid the price. I didn't, didn't get a chance to get away with it. I kind of cut a corner and got nailed, and it was just that quick. It just happened, and it was done. As soon as it happened, it was over with. I didn't even get that second of suspense where you're like, oh, maybe it was a dry bite. Like, maybe he didn't inject venom. I knew immediately, bro. As soon as he tagged me, I just go, I won't say it on air, but the word starts with F. And I was like,
and rhymes with duck. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just knew, man. And I felt the heat. It felt like I touched a stove really quickly. And I ran to the light. I put the lid on the cage. I ran to the light. And I look at it. And I think I got lucky because I only saw one red dot. And so I think perhaps only one fang had penetrated. And that may have saved me big, man, because due to a mixture of issues, fear of allergic reactions, some inexperience by the medical staff. So there's a lot of things going on. I was not over at like the Venom Center. I went somewhere in my network and I kind of knew I'd be dealing with less experience. I wasn't dealing with a toxicologist. I was, dealing with somebody who just came out of an operating room. And I don't think they took the bite quite as seriously maybe as they should have. And I think that there was a little bit of bias, just a tickle of it, a financial bias inside of me where I just didn't, I wanted to believe them when they were like, I don't know if it needs anti-venom right now. And I walked through, hey, this is a non-native species. It's not something you'd see in this area. You're used to dealing with copperhead bites. This is very different. I explained all that and everything, but I did remind them that it's a small rattlesnake. I didn't mean to, like, I don't want to worry you and make you think like I feel life threatening. I think that my worst case scenario is I lose my hand here. And that was just based off of my own feelings and what I've seen from other people and my knowledge of that species. And so I think because they saw me as somebody that kind of like knew about snakes and that I wasn't like freaking out, I wonder if that sort of played into a bit of, in my opinion, like a nonchalantness to their thing. And so it took 48 hours to get the anti-venom, and I actually had to threaten to leave before the doctor left the operating room and came to see me. And I was kind of at a point of, I started off very nonchalant. I'm a very friendly person and I try to take things like, not too seriously, even when they are really serious and be light and nice to people. But I kind of had to turn on my business hat and be like, look, I'm leaving. Stop giving me the painkillers. I need to unhook and I need to leave, because if you guys are not going to see me, I'm watching the swelling and it is at my shoulder now. And my shoulder is now like bigger than it should be. And my forearm is twice the size and my hand is three times the size. This is becoming a serious issue. And if you
That's
guys
just
know,
creatine.
No, it looks like I've been using one hand more than the other, if you know what I mean. But
look like quagmire.
It's kind of scary, bro. And I'm like, hey, look. If you guys aren't going to see me, I'm just going to go take this into my own hands and go find another person who will see me and potentially give me anti-venom. And so thankfully there's one nurse there who, that lady, bless her heart, because she told the doctor, she said, hey, I want you to know I saw his hand this morning and it did not look like this. That just in the last, 8 hours, that his whole arm is blown up in size. Like, I don't know. And so I think that mixed with my kind of like, look, you guys got to do something here. I'm not just going to sit here and collect a bill and not receive anti-venom. The blood tests are helpful and I respect all that. That's necessary. I'm not saying that like, oh, you should just go untreated, but I would like to go somewhere that is actually going to look at my bite and consider anti-venom when my arm is swelling up. So that was kind of where I was at. And had to threaten to leave. And so 48 hours, like if you're going to give anti-venom, you should do it as soon as possible. So I hate that 48 hours went by before I was given anti-venom. Thankfully, I did not have any allergic reactions to the anti-venom. And it went pretty smoothly after that. I didn't need a ton of it. My body did a decent job, actually, of fighting it off on my own. In a weird scientific way, I wish I could have seen, like, without the anti-venom, what would have happened?
Yeah.
But yeah, to summarize it all, man, it's just a big undertaking that I do not recommend. And like, if you're curious about the pain,
I'm not curious. I know it hurts. I don't need to know more details, but
yeah, it lasts longer than you'd think is all I'll say. Like, that pain might be manageable, but that pain is going to stay for like 9-10 days straight. And that's a not that serious snake bite, compared to like, you know, some of your like really, really dangerous snakes that can like drop you dead over in other areas of the world. So,
even more dangerous species here in North America. So,
oh, definitely. Definitely. Now, one thing I did learn that was kind of interesting was, actually Lepidus is more venomous than I really even realized going into this. And I didn't figure it out until Snake Days this weekend when I was talking to some locals, and they one of them said, I'd rather take a Lepidus bite than a blacktail or an Aatrox. And that actually surprised me a lot. And I was like, well, wait, but the prey species of a Lepidus is lizards primarily, if not solely. The prey species of an Aatrox is a mammal that's larger. It could even go up to a rabbit. It's a larger sized prey, a larger snake, larger venom glands. These are all kind of like leading to more toxin and more, like, it just seems like a worse bite. And this guy's telling me he'd rather take that than a Lepidus. And so then I kind of like went off that and I asked a few other people, and there's definitely some truth to it, that actually, I guess what he was saying, and I'm trying to remember exactly how he described it. There are a lot of quick conversations that day, but I think it comes down to kind of like, if I had to guess, maybe the heart rate, and like he described it as reptilians are harder to kill than mammals in some ways. And so I'm like, I don't know, like you, I'm kind of sitting there, I was listening to it and I was very surprised and kind of puzzled. But then I talked to a few other people and they actually supported that. And when I posted this on Facebook recently, this new fact I had learned about my snake bite, I had a few more people call and or comment and be like, yeah, I had a buddy. This one guy said he had a buddy who literally took a claw bite. The banded rock rattlesnake, the cousin of the mottled rock, for those who may not know. And he took a clawbrite bite. And by the time he like reached out, he got his phone and he was like, he's a herper. He wasn't too freaked out. He called somebody, and the next thing he knew, he woke up in the ICU. And so like, I don't know what went down with his chemistry that led to him just like passing out. But yeah, that was an interesting story. Now, given these are Facebook comments, so you can never really be too certain of anything. But yeah, no.
In other news, the Facebook comments, there are now 10-foot long copperheads found in eastern Texas. So,
bro, no, okay, you're gonna get me going on a whole tangent, because I have really been a mainly Instagram person for the first, like, you know, the whole lifetime of my little Instagram page. And over the last year, I've kind of been like, well, I'm putting in all this time, effort, money, and Instagram, like, through all of this, like, I'm spending hours upon hours per day creating content for them. And they just, like, were not giving me nothing. So I was like, okay, maybe I try Facebook. Obviously, they're both owned by Meta, but I'd heard some people who were getting little bits of money. So I'm like, okay, maybe I'd try the Facebook thing. And so now that I'm posting more on Facebook a lot, I have to say, man, the community on Facebook is pretty brutal. And like, people are like, they will comment, like, Instagram is just more fast paced. Like, people just like eat content at like a fast rate and just consume it and scroll and like quick comments. Facebook, people will leave like a essay for you of just like why they hate you and like everything you're doing or like whatever it is. And there's just like a lot more opinions. And I find myself a little more careful like with Facebook and kind of like, I feel like people get like really upset quicker on Facebook. And the comments, not really that, going off of what you said of that like 10-foot copperhead, the comments are even that more like far-fetched and absurd. Like I hear some stuff that like we could create a meme page out of Facebook like comments of like some of the just it's amazing how oppositely incorrect some people can be when they say stuff and fully believe it to be true. And you're like, oh my gosh, how do you think these thoughts in your brain? And then like actually like then like manifest them into a comment that you actually put out into the world for people to see. But that's the snake world that we live in, man. It's such a like misunderstood animal. And you just get the craziest people when you post snake videos. So it's just funny. I could go on for hours about like some of the crazy things people said to me, but I enjoy it. Even when people are mean, I enjoy interacting and trying my best to share what I love and educate or to the best of my abilities. You know, I don't want to claim to be a big, like I'm doing some amazing thing, but you know, I try my best.
Yeah. So you said it was speckled rock that tagged you?
No, it was mottled rock rattlesnake. Yeah. So the Lepidus over here in West Texas. Of course, like I mentioned, it was my own captive bred that I purchased, but that species exists in the wild out in West Texas.
Okay. Yeah, but you mentioned all the way at the beginning of the story how you had the wrong tongs, and I've noticed this a lot with other people I've talked to who have told me it's always happens with their worst entry with their reptiles. It's always when they take a shortcut and don't use the equipment they know is the right equipment to use for that. So.
Yep. And, you know, man, one mistake that I didn't mention and that I should be honest and upfront about as well is, not just with venomous snakes, but in a lot of areas of my life, I am someone who I learn by doing in a lot of cases. And I think looking back, I thought I'd done enough research and I'd you know, talk to people who are venomous keepers and I'd you know, learned about protocols and all the stuff. And I kind of thought I'd caught the gist of it. But I think looking back on it, there's a lot more I could have done to learn from people prior to acquiring the snakes that I did. Or maybe perhaps even starting with something that's like venomous, but basically not venomous, like a little copperhead, you know, it might've been a good idea. There are a lot of interim steps I could have taken or a lot of things I could have done differently to educate myself better to hear advice like that. Like if I had, you know, heard that and ingrained it in my brain earlier on, I simply would not have allowed this to happen. But to summarize it, yeah, man, it's embarrassing. And while I do laugh and joke about it and try to just kind of make the most out of any situation, I don't want people to like take it lightly because the main driving force behind me posting is that I want to give back. I want to like show people how beautiful, our amazing earth is and how cool the animals on it are. I don't want to show them the more reasons to think that it's something we don't need to care about or that we should be afraid of. So it's a failure. It's a complete and total failure on my part. And if there's anything anybody can glean from this podcast, let it be that, talk to people, feel free to reach out to me. You know, exercise caution just in general, whether it be getting into keeping hots or it be when you're feeding them in general, you know, just be ultra conservative, even more conservative than you think. I know guys who I actually, in my head, I was like, man, that almost seems like overkill. Dudes who go in and they've got like their front door locked with crazy mechanisms that reach to another locked mechanism. To another locked mechanism to enter a room where all of their locks have like multiple redundancy layers set up and they put on double gloves and double hooks and double everything. And like, to the extent that it's like, holy cow, like, how do you even operate with so much gear? And the answer to that is like, you need to be doing that. You really need to be taking it that seriously, thinking as if any moment, like, a Black Mamba can jump out of the cage and attack you. Like, while we all know as herpers that that's very, very unlikely, it's, we got to be responsible, and we got to kind of assume that that the worst can happen, and we don't want to be the guy like me who made that mistake and got bit. So, yeah, man, I'm embarrassed, and I'm sure you can tell because I'm just going on about it. But yeah, that's all I can say is don't get bit.
Yeah, but I was going to pick you off that with the rock art alligator cape. What else do you keep in your collection?
I've got okay, so most of my snakes starting out were just people giving me snakes because
you're the snake guy,
yeah, exactly. People are just like, hey, I don't know how to do this thing, have it. And so the reason I mention that is because I probably would not have a reticulated python. Actually, I know for a fact there's no chance I would have a reticulated python. I have one, and it's kind of because somebody was like, I think just I hope this person would never hear this. I don't think maybe they were adequately able to take care of it. And to be fair,
that's like 99.9% of people in the world. So
yes, the reptile industry is, I won't get into it too much, but it can be kind of morbid if you think about it in terms of that. Maybe a different topic for a different day, but I get what you're putting down. So yeah, I got a 15-foot reticulated python that I kind of am actually looking at trying to find a good home for somebody that like really, really wants one, who is able to take care of a snake of that size. And I'd even give it to him for free, obviously. But yeah, so if anybody on this podcast hears that, let me know. But then in addition to the reticulated python, I've got two California king snakes. One of them being like a bloodline from the Yuma area, so it's like a darker coloration. I thought that was pretty cool. And then the other being a bloodline of the San Diego locality. You know how the California Kings have that stripe? Well, this one is reverse. So it has the stripe, but instead of it being black with a white stripe, it's white with a black stripe. It's a little project, a little morph project that one of my buddies from California, Left Coast Herpin, did. And he sent me a snake out of the kindness of his heart. And so I've got that. And then I have a liar snake. It's a Norton liar snake as well. And that is a snake that I think it might have been wild caught. But the guy that gave it to me, I don't know too much about his situation. He was just kind of like, hey, I'm moving, and I need to get rid of all these snakes. So he gave me the two kings and that liar snake. But hey, it's on frozen thawed pinkies. Pumped about that. And as far as the hots go, I've got three. So I got a blue insularis. It's about a year old. I've got a speckled rattlesnake from the Yuma area. And again, I don't collect. I've not collected in my life. I'm not saying it's like a huge tragedy if people do, if they do so like responsibly. But yeah, I don't collect. So I especially think it would be kind of bad with those white speckled rattlesnakes. It's such a unique gene pool that it's like, bro, you can't pull from that one.
Yeah.
And lastly, I've already mentioned the mottled rock rattlesnakes. I've got seven snakes right now. And also a sulcata tortoise. I had one literally wander into my backyard. And yeah, the rest is history. There's a whole story on that. But that's kind of my setup for reptilians, is one tortoise and seven snakes. I at one point had a panther chameleon, and sadly it died after a long, good, healthy life. But yeah, that's kind of the history of my snake keeping can be summarized by those eight animals, or reptile keeping, I guess. So it's actually something that if you had asked me like 7 years ago what I thought about keeping snakes, I'd have probably said, I don't think you're like evil if you do it, but it seems sad to me to keep a snake that's meant to be wild in a small enclosure. Now, as I've grown and educated myself more and like really gotten to know snakes, I feel that you know, you have some species that are born and actually literally do not leave like a 30-foot radius their whole like lifespan. I think the indigo snake occupies like one of the largest kind of like home areas of like a half acre or something like that. So if you can provide, like, is that not true?
I don't know. Like, I don't know about that. From what I've heard, like from radio tracking, from what I've heard about them, I think this is the eastern indigos, is some males will like just go out of their burrow and range for over like several square miles over the course of a couple of days and then go back to that burrow. So,
oh wow, okay, very different. But yeah, I mean, I don't really keep indigos, and aside from the reticulated python, there's not a lot of large snakes. But I mean, yeah, I guess the point I was making is like, it was something that it's slowly like just kept leaking into my bloodstream, and now it's like becoming a more of a part of my life, and I'm starting to be able to kind of combine the herping side of it with the keeping side of it by like learning and getting species that I'm really interested in and that I want to learn more about so that I can find them in the wild. So it's been cool just to be able to like watch my snakes and take care of them. And actually it's interesting because the keeping community is so much bigger. There's so much money in it. There's like more of a scene. You just get more people, which equals more like knowledge a lot of times. So I'm not saying like one community is better than the other by any means, and I would back the herping community all day, but there's a lot of super knowledgeable people that like I didn't expect to really be teaching me about wild snakes, but they're like captive guys, and but they have this really unique intimacy with like they're living with these snakes, and they run into these like fascinating scenarios, and you start to learn actually from them as well. And so it's growing on me, and I guess I'm fully in the deep end now with the rattlesnake bite. But yeah, I guess to summarize it all, those are my seven snakes, and I used to feel guilty about keeping snakes, but I don't anymore. Not quite as much. I think if as long as you're doing the right things and taking good care of your animals, and as long as you're truly like excited to work with that animal, then you're going to do a good job. If you're not that into it, if you're not really that excited about it, it's going to be harder to take good care of your animal. And that goes for any animal. So yeah, I don't want to be one of those guys with a 200 snake collection. I'd like to have a small collection of things that I really, really love, and just kind of keep it at that. Also, because I don't have time, man. Keeping is a lot of time. Yeah,
it is. Well, I've got two or three more questions before we end it. So first off, is there any place in the world that you haven't gone herping yet that's on top of your list to go herping?
Okay. You'll learn I'm pretty indecisive. So I'm going to again give you a small list, because it really truly does for me come, I'm very opportunistic. And so all of these sound equally good, and I will basically, the first one will be whichever the best opportunity financially or like with the right group of people who I want to meet, like whatever it is. It would either be Australia, Southeast Asia, Africa. And I know I'm listing like countries here, not like
continents. Yeah.
Yeah. The African continent. You're right. I didn't even go country there. And also, man, I think honestly, more likely than not is I'm going to end up in South America first, and I ain't mad about it. I think there's some really, really cool stuff in South America. I really want to see the Amazon rainforest. And so if I had to give you an answer, that's probably going to be next up is South America. Not necessarily because I think it's better than all the other places I listed, but because I think that it's closer to me, probably more affordable at this stage of my life. And I really do want to see what South America has to offer. So, that's probably going to be the next one.
All right. And second to final question, what advice would you give to people who are just getting into herping?
man, That's a really good question. I'm thinking here because I want to be intentional about what I say. I don't want to sound like holier than thou, but I was always kind of innately like very sensitive to the animals. And like, I would always kind of over worry and concern myself with the animal's health in a lot of cases. And as I met other herpers and keepers, and I realized how tough some of these animals are, I've actually kind of loosened up on some of those things. But my advice is just to like, just be cautious and assume that these animals are made of glass and that they're fragile or pregnant or in pain or hungry and starving and looking for a meal or overheating. When an animal has to thermoregulate on its own, life is a lot harder for them. And timing is a lot different for them. If they stay out in the sun too long, they can die, like really a lot faster than we can. And so my advice is to like be inquisitive, to talk to people and ask questions, and to assume that like you want to just be as careful as possible, because I've really, and kind of recently, I've seen a lot of new people get into it, and it's like, I don't know if really the passion for the animal is there in the sense that they maybe want to go see it. But sometimes I'm like, hey man, don't do it at the expense of the animal. I've seen that happen a couple times recently. My last bit of advice is, and it actually sort of contradicts some of the last things I said about being cautious, but it's to just go do it. Like, get up and go do it. If you are the guy that sits back all day long on your phone messaging other herpers trying to like find out where to go and like, no, like I need more specific, like, dude, I'm not a very opinionated person, but that's one that I have a chip on my shoulder about. And I actually will help people out when they reach out to me, but you can pretty quickly tell when somebody like they just want the glory of finding the snake, but they're not really that interested in like the actual process. And to me, that's the most rewarding part, is like the journey of like earning that snake. And, you know, to the extent that like when I was younger, I wouldn't take help in a lot of cases when it was offered, because I wanted to challenge myself. And I'm not saying everybody needs to do that, and I don't do that majority of the time. So again, I'm not trying to sound holier than thou, but I just that's my advice. Like, get into it, go have fun, ask people, you know, don't take things too seriously, don't take life too seriously, and be open-minded. But just be careful with the snakes and with any animals, because they can be fragile, and you know, it wouldn't be the first time. Like, everybody has that experience. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I've had that experience where you find out after the fact. I literally told you the story, right? My first snake find ever. That's the perfect example. Like, you don't know what you're doing, and you make a mistake. So it's always just good to be cautious. That's what I'll say, you know.
All right. And final question. Where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Road Trip Monster on all platforms. So just the word Road Trip and then the word Monster, like the energy drink, all one word. And actually on Twitter, which I literally never post on, I think I had to take out the E because somebody took my username. So it's just Road Trip Monster. Without the E, but R. So that's where you can find me. And I hope to produce some decent content and, you know, eventually be able to do this full time one day. So I appreciate any support. I appreciate you having me on here and taking interest in what I'm doing. And yeah, man, if the stars align, we'll have to get out and actually meet in person sometime.
Yeah. Well, I do like coming down to the Houston area once a year. So.
Bro, I got an extra room in my house right now. You're more than welcome to stop by, crash here, and see if we can get you a couple lifers.
Sounds like a plan. I'll reach out to you then. All right.
Cool, man. All right. Thanks for coming on.